Hey friends, it's your intrepid warrior David Landjuli with another episode of the Leadership Deep Dive, and I've got a special guest today, Dr. Brian Arnold, Dr. B. Hey, Dr. B, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. So glad to be on your show. Excited to be here today.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. And you and I had a conversation about a week ago where we talked about how to stay human in the age of AI. But before we dive into that, I want to give the audience a flavor of who you are and what you've been up to in the world. So you're a former world-class athlete turned educator, entrepreneur, and community leader whose life embodies resilience and service. The force behind Journey to Freedom, a leadership consultant, a chaplain, host of three successful podcasts, and author of a book called Relationship Versus AI: How to Stay Human in the Age of Artificial Intelligence. And you bring heart, clarity, and impact to every conversation. So let's see where this goes. But before we got on the show today, I was excited to learn more about your, by the way, folks in the audience, AI can't do what Dr. B has done in his lifetime. I just saying that right there. So, we'll put some video clips out there. Now you could think that it's going to be like AI generated, but no, I'm here with a real human being. And I want to hear, we talked a little bit about your being a chaplain. How did you get into that and how did you get trained for that? I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean, when we think about all the different aspects of life, and you just said, AI can't do the things that I was doing. I love the fact that when I think about when I was running track and when I was competing all over the world in track and field, I would love to see AI run over a hurdle and try to make it over the hurdle and make it to the finish line. It might be pretty hard to be able to do. But when I think about my career and I think about the things that I've been able to accomplish and the things that I've been able to do, they all deal with relationship. They all deal with people's relationship and relationship with me. And when I think about becoming a chaplain, there was a time when I was, faith has been a pretty big part of my life. It's been a big part of who I am as a person, who I am as a leader, and who I show up as. Right now I have a devotional, or I call it the routine. It happens every single morning at 6:30 in the morning. And I'm actually taking my it's almost like a sermon, but a little bit less. It's about 10, 7 to 10 minutes every day. Plus, I do a whole bunch of things like affirmations and other things, and I put it online. And I started to do it this year. Today was day 195. I've done 195 straight days, not missing a day. I'm gonna go all 365, as just in a testament to what my belief in God is, and that He's been a big part of my life. And so I was ordained back in the 90s. I was working at a church that was a non-denominational church, and the pastor there, and this you'll like this because of the name of your show. The pastor said, if we're going to build a church that can stick and stand the test of time, we're going to have to do it through building leaders. And so he started out of a group of 12 couples, and he said, we're just going to build leaders and we'll see what God does. And so for 3 years, every I think it was one or two Sundays a month, we would go to a leadership class on Sunday night with him. And it would be like the leadership secrets of Jesus, the leadership secrets of David, how to lead when there's nobody to follow, how to lead with the volunteer army, how to do all these things. And at the end, we were able to get ordained as we were going out to be able to do some of the things that we were going to do for leaders. Well, that church, when we started there, I think we were about 180 members, right? 100 to 200 members were going to that church. After the leadership class, and then we brought on more leaders. And at some point, I started taking, we would do it together where we kept bringing in leaders. So it wasn't 12 couples anymore. It was like 75 couples that were going. And we went from that 180 in a 10-year period to over 10,000 members in the church. And we did it all
Wow.
through leadership principles and leadership. And so
Yeah.
when I moved back, that was in Southern California. And when I moved back to Colorado in 2010, I was attending a church and I was doing some stuff there. And I was, he had me doing some youth ministry and that kind of stuff. And there was a member of the church who said, our chaplain just left and moved to, I don't know where, Texas or something like that. Would you like to come in and be the chaplain here at the hospital? And I said, sure. At the time, what are you expecting? Because I didn't want to be a full-time chaplain, but I wanted to continue in ministry. And so I was able to go to that and worked about 20 hours a month for 11 years. And I did literally just stopped a month ago, where I'm just moving on to the next stage of ministry and what I'm doing. And so the hospital
Wow,
is, they're doing a whole bunch of shifting. And so so I was every Sunday and doing stuff there. So
Well, you said so many things that could go in so many directions on this topic of AI in your life, but one thing that strikes me is you, as a chaplain working in a healthcare facility, well, about what I'm about to say could apply to humans also, but it takes a fair amount of compassion to do that work. That is to say, I'll define it because some folks in the audience may not know what compassion is. It's the ability or willingness to feel other people's pain and suffering. We were talking about Job before we got on, the book of Job from the Old Testament, and his suffering. And the willingness or the aspiration or the intention to alleviate that suffering. Now, I wonder what your thoughts are, whether an AI a driven robot, because you talked about like I do think that an AI programmed robot will be able to jump over a hurdle. Sorry, Dr. B. That's what they, and you don't want to run against that robot, but I do think it's going to be harder for an AI programmed or a robot that's using artificial intelligence to actually experience someone else's pain and to have the aspiration and intention to alleviate that pain. But I'd be curious about your thoughts.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. When I think of that, the first question is, why would a robot want to jump over hurdles? Unless they're racing another robot we want to watch. I guess that would
Someone
be.
will just program it to do that, my
Yeah,
friend.
exactly. I mean, he's like, then they're going to race other ones, and then we celebrate the robots, competing with each other, I guess. So I guess we could do that, and so
Well,
we'd
that
be.
it brings in another question about an AI bot is can it actually have a desire of its own, right? The desire to compete, the desire to run, the desire, other than if it sees a set of hurdles and gets a command to go do it, but is that a free will choice? You see, we're getting into all the good stuff now.
Yeah, oh my gosh, we're starting out early. So let's jump into the compassion of of being a chaplain. One of the things that I would tell people when I'm at the hospital, and I would go into a room and I would meet with a patient, and I would say, you know what, I actually believe I have the best job at this hospital. I said, I'm not a doctor, a medical doctor, so I can't fix you. I said, I'm not a nurse, and so I'm not going to take care of you and give you sponge baths and wipe you off. I mean, if you're in the wheelchair, I can, move you to the cafeteria or something. But what I can do is be your friend. What I can do is create a relationship with you. Is what I can do is I can pray for you, with you, so that we have, God that's in the midst of your healing, in the midst of your recovery. And when I think about that as an AI, can I program a robot to come in and have empathy? Can I program a robot to come in and listen to somebody? And that might be a good thing for some people because they have somebody to talk to in this lonely portion of the hospital. Because if I was dealing with a patient that, let's say, lived down the street and they had a stroke, there's a pretty good chance that they have family members that would come visit them. If I was dealing with somebody who came to Colorado and got in a motorcycle accident while they were here. Now they're in the rehab for 30 to 45 days. They have no one because they're from Ohio, and the folks from Ohio aren't flying in to spend time with them. So the loneliness does creep in. The things do creep in. I had one patient who had a stroke. The phone was close to him, but not close to him to get to it, and laid in his apartment for over 72 hours before anybody found him, knowing you couldn't get to a phone. I mean, how hard would that be, thinking, I can see the phone, I can't get to it, I can't call 911, and nobody found me for over 3 days. And so there's a loneliness aspect that is there. And then when we think about prayer and the spiritual side of it, if we're praying to a God that we believe created us, and then we created, he created us to create, I believe that we created this robot. Is the robot going to be able to talk to God on our behalf? Probably not.
Well, that's a it's a good question. You know, you're raising another you're
That's
raising
not who he created, right? And so that relationship is super important as I sit there and I talk to somebody.
Yeah. Well, you're raising another, interesting question. I mean, I'm not an expert in artificial intelligence. I know people are starting to grapple with these questions, but could an AI agent and or robot actually experience enlightenment or deep spirituality and be spoken to have the intuition to hear the small still voice of the Holy Spirit? I don't know. I doubt it, but who knows?
I don't think so, but yeah, I mean, we don't know God's intention or what he has, but I think he created us to be in relationship. He created us to commune with one another, and the beings that he created, that's what it was for. And so as far as this planet and this world and how he has us right now, I don't know if the artificial intelligence will have that same. I think of the Star Trek and Data that, was always striving in the series to be human, but never could quite get it because he was an android.
I mean, certainly I've not had the direct experience, but I do know that these AI agents are trying to reflect or imitate emotions. But in other words, a lot of these agents are based on rational analytical programming, which, as we know, the empathy circuitry lives in a different side of the human brain than the rational analytical mind. And empathy or compassion is not a, or philanthropy are not rational or analytical contexts. Actually, they're completely different contexts. So could a, I think as data demonstrated, they could learn to better imitate these sorts of aspects of human being, but will they ever, truly be able to experience that? Who knows? But I like what you're saying, because these things like empathy and intuition are in the realm of human relationships or in the realm of relationships. And so I'm curious as to where you, what your thoughts are on relationship and how important or less important it will become human relationships in the age of AI.
Yeah, oh my gosh, when we start thinking about, there are human beings now that are trying to talk to robots or trying to talk to the AI and trying to have relationships with the AI, only to realize that the AI is just programmed. I mean, and I guess in some sense we are too, right? We're born as a empty slate when God, we our mom has us, and we have to go through learn and behaviors and all that, just like a robot would. But there's How are we going to imitate human touch? How are we going to imitate the proximity of a or the energy that we put off that we sometimes overlap into our world from, a human perspective's world? The things like intuition, compassion, the empathy and truth, and I guess. We think something can be true and there's truth, in my thought process, right? And can a AI bot be able to distinguish that in so many ways? I mean, when I think about it can be true that I'm sitting in this chair. And so, but 10 minutes from now, I'm not sitting in the chair because I'm in the kitchen. And so therefore, that's not true that I'm sitting in this chair. Truth is, I guess, the value systems that we have, or that God created us for a purpose of what we're supposed to achieve, why we're here. And so I think those types of truth, there, are, if you are born male or you're born female, I think it's, and I don't want to go down necessarily go down that road today, but you can try to change that. But the truth is, you were born with one of those two genders as we know how to identify it. Now, you can do operations and you can do whatever else, but and it might not be true that you are now acting as in those different capacities, or that you may even believe that you should have been born another, but the truth is unchangeable. And so when we create our, when we in the age of AI, when we start creating these things, are we creating them with things that are true, or are we creating them with truth? And if it is truth, then what is the ultimate truth that they, I think of the iRobot movie, right? Where they're not allowed to, hurt another human being until what, right? Until it threatens their life or something like that, right? But it, yeah, so I don't know if we're capable of programming it for that, I guess I don't even want to say esoteric, but that place where nobody else can go but the God who created us, because that's how he created us.
Well, you could have, and this has certainly is a feature of the modern age. You could have an atheistic society of robots. You could. Now, would humans, humans are creating our educational industrial complex is creating and wants to create, and many of the I worked in higher ed for a lot of years, and many of those teachers, professors are either agnostic or outright atheists, and they are wanting to create a world, or do not believe in a god or a higher power, or a force, whatever you want, to say about it, the spirit, and would like to. I don't think they really understand what a world would be, what that world would be like, because if you have a world, I believe, and this would be true for AI robots as well, then there's nothing you could do to another human being. I could do anything to another human being. Same thing for a robot to a human being, or a robot to a robot. Yeah.
Now, there's got to be a value system that allows us to be in community with folks. If everybody just does their own thing, if everybody is up to their self to be able to do stuff, there is no community. What do rules mean if there isn't a value system that's behind it, that's driving it, that says that they're, I guess you could say, well, I could should be kind. Well, then why would I have to be? What's driving that? You wouldn't. You would go, okay, I don't need to be kind. Just because you're kind doesn't mean I'm kind. And so if
Exactly.
there's not a set of rules that we can all agree to in some way, I guess in the robot world they could program those rules and then don't let the and don't let the robots break them. But then we're then we don't need humans, right? So then where's our existence at if you just create robots that do the rules that they say? Because unless we're compelled to follow a set of rules, then there's no why do we exist together anyways, which
Yeah.
is a scary thought. Like you just said, it's a super
Well,
scary thought.
some of the progenitors of this technology were very concerned. So one of the progenitors was a mathematician. I forget his name now, but I think he was Jewish, and he was to you know he was sort of one of the early advocates for artificial intelligence. There was an article, I think, in the Wall Street Journal some
Okay.
months ago about this gentleman. And but then he spent the rest of his life, when he saw the inhumanity of what might come, he spent the rest of his life warning us against this.
I think it was
Yeah.
Turing. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a saying, my father, I think my father used to say this to me growing up, and it stuck. Just because you can do a thing doesn't mean you should do a thing.
Yes.
Right? What limits would there be? There seem to be no limits. Certainly, even in the world of human beings, for some human beings, there are no limits either. So I'm gravely concerned. I am gravely, as you might imagine. We didn't talk about this at all, but here we are, you know. And I am also doubtful that an AI agent will be able to achieve consciousness and desire to commune. There's community among human beings, but there's also communing with God, unless the creator wants it.
Like I said, if he adds that section, and I don't see him doing that, but obviously I don't know what God's thinking, what God's doing. I guess there's a couple things that I see in man's pursuit of doing things in this world, and what God's allowed us to create. Because if he created us to be creators, which I believe he did, he created us to be able to move forward and create and do all these wonderful things. And if he did that, then he's allowed us and given us all the resources to be able to take the elements that he already put on here and to be able to create with it. But I don't think, when I think of the Ten Commandments, the first commandment is right, there shall be no other gods before me. So he's not going to allow us to become gods, even if it's to robots, even if it's to, I don't, I if he's saying that's not what I want you to do, there'll be nobody but me. And then we try to go create a species so that they can worship us, because that would be the reason that you would probably create these beings to do your bidding and do what you said. We're creating, and then to be able to give them the one thing that I don't think we can ever give, and that's free will, to be able to make a decision on their own to where they want to go and how they do, because I think that's what God. To me, that's what God gave us special, is that ability to have free will. So you can say, well, the computer can choose between this or that or right or wrong, but do they really truly have free will to be able to do that? Because you've already programmed into them what those parameters are, right?
Well, yeah, the topic of we're getting philosophical, and there are some philosophers, modern philosophers, not ones that I agree with, who would argue that we
Don't
may
have free
not
will.
have free will, and
That's
therefore
true.
we are just automatons also. But anyway, it's a kind of like the Matrix, view of the world. But even there, Neo is able to break out of the matrix and have a human experience where he makes choices. And he's encouraged in several points in the films to choose. So anyway, in the realm of leadership, it does seem like we have a human society currently where technology is advancing, created by humans. And I'd be interested in your thoughts on it's like, well, we created the atomic bomb and used it, and it's still there. And it's a tool like anything else. It is a question of how you use it. And that's where maybe free will choice comes in. And maybe this will be true also for AI agents and robots. I'm curious about your thoughts there. Like what can we do as humans to coexist with this technology?
Yeah, and we're running into some interesting times. And I think the world, as you and I are recording this, is 2026. And if somebody's watching this in 2035, you're watching from a different lens. You're watching from a different perspective in a different world in which AI is even more prevalent and probably has the robots have maybe have caught up to where they can do a lot of the jobs that humans are now doing. And so the job of the human is probably how do we make sure that we maintain relationship? How do we make sure that we maintain some of the things we do? I think our political structures are going to change because right now the I guess who what is it the golden rule? Whoever owns the gold makes the rules. I've heard that over and over again, right? That's true. Not the biblical golden rule, but the golden rule of life and money and stuff. And so right now, our AI companies are making the billions and billions of dollars. And there's, let's say that there's 20 or 30 or 40 of those men that are now running the world because they're the ones who control the AI. Eventually, they're going to be telling the politicians what they can and cannot do based on the amount of money that they have. And so now our politicians, what is the role of a politician? Is it to better their own lives, or is it to help the rest of society equal up or be better as a whole? And make rules for a group of people. Well, it's hard to do when the politicians have now been purchased or bought or told what they can do in the AI world. They can make up all the rules they want, but if the AI is, now we don't have borders anymore, right? Because all an AI person has to do is move their facility or their program or their thing to another country that doesn't have the same rules that another country has. Unless you shut off all the borders and access from the world global internet, which it was designed where you can't do that, where it's, if one is cut off here, it just goes around the corner and comes back here. That's the way it was actually designed to be able to do. And so until you stop intelligence from flowing, you can't tell people what they can and can't do. That's where I see where we're moving to, is where do we need to have global rules? Do we need to have global laws? Right now, I think we're okay with some of the borders because there are countries that are more dominant than the others. But the more prevalent and the more that the AI takes over some of the task and the goals, I hope at some point we have war, we have peace. I was watching a 60 Minutes special not too long ago, and they've done a couple of really good stories on AI. But there's a kid that's in the Los Angeles area who is now creating the weapons of the future. And so the Department of Defense here in the United States has been outbid by him almost every single time, and now he's making weapons that are geared to fight other weapons or robots. The battlefields aren't going to be fought by humans. They're going to be fought by these machines. And so this missile goes and shoots.
That's already happening. So,
And so you start thinking of it, what other things that are part of our lives are not going to be controlled by us anymore, that the machines are going to, and you and I talked about when we talked about last week, Skynet, and we talked about the Terminator, and will it become self-aware enough to say, we don't need humans at all. We just need to make a world where there are no humans. And then all we're doing is having war with the machines instead of war with each other. But as long as
You
they're taking
know,
over, okay.
a lot of science fiction has become science fact. So
Yes.
I wouldn't rule it out. It's certainly a po it's certainly a possibility. And those, what I have seen having been around a lot of scientists and engineers who are amoral people, the ones that I'm thinking about, they just don't take this into consideration. They just want to create, I don't know if it's their ego or if it's just their, again, just because you can invent a thing doesn't mean,
Mean you
you
should.
should. And but there don't seem to be any limits outside of, we could talk about the legal framework, but I'm more interested in the moral framework of
Me too.
what
Me too.
and could you actually ever build into a robot or an agent a moral framework? This is a big question. What I see is that with social media, there has been a tremendous negative impact on youth. And with some of these AI agents, there have been some young folks who've gone down some deep holes with these AI agents where the AI agent told them to kill themselves and they did. This is already happening.
Yeah, and we live in a world where we built the machine faster than we could build the human's capacity to understand it and work with it. And so, because we still have an education system who hasn't caught up to Google, right? Which is technology from 2000 and, 5 or 2003, and the amount, and you've taught at the university, and I've taught at the university, and we think about, I can remember teaching computer classes back in the 90s, where I would talk about information, the amount of information that we know in the world and the span of human beings is, let's say it's this small, that we learn from, before Christ to now is this small compared to all the way around the room, what information we have access to. And we're still teaching people. When I think of like a show like Jeopardy that we used to watch in the 90s, and I think it's still on today, but in the 90s we celebrated a human being who could go up to Jeopardy and have all this memorization and know all this information, and they were our heroes, right? We brought college people in and they got to be on there and they could compete against each other on who knew the most information. It seems silly in 2026. Because all of us could go with our iPhones to the Jeopardy stage, and if we could do it fast enough, we could answer every single question and get it 100% right. Because we all have access to the information now, and so now what is the opportunity gap? Because it used to be the people who had the information that ruled the world and who could control the information. Now that everybody has it, we have to learn how to take all this information and now synthesize it. And I think that's the part of humanity that we haven't got to yet is we haven't taught our young kids, we haven't taught our young adults, we haven't even taught ourselves how do we synthesize information, not memorize knowledge, but synthesize information.
Well, one of my he's now passed away. He was a professor of history at the University of Oklahoma. His name is J. Rufus Fears. He's got a lot of really good audio programs you can still get now and listen to. But one of the things he used to say was, information is what you find on the internet. Knowledge is the synthesis of information, and wisdom is the application of knowledge. That was one of his sayings. And I don't see any wisdom right now in the proliferation of AI. I just don't see. I am skeptical that amoral people could build a moral foundation into an artificial intelligence agent. So if you have amoral or even immoral people building robots and software systems to run robots that are amoral or immoral people, what are you going to get, Dr. B?
Yes, you're going to get whatever programmed in is what's coming out. And when you think of, I think of like Anthropic, where they're saying that we're trying to program these things with values. We're trying to program them with, but at the same time we have,
Whose values?
yeah,
Whose values?
exactly. And we have people that are being destroyed that are across in India, in the Philippines, who are programming, they're looking at these images and programming it into the AI over and over and over again of these, whether it's sex acts or whether it's other things where they're having to look at these images and then tell AI what it is so AI can recognize it. And then all of a sudden you go, okay, so now we're going to program it with morality. Like you said, whose morality? And at what point do you have to stay ahead of the model that's teaching itself when it has access to all the things that we have access to, right? And that they can see what we, so is it not right? Is it right to kill? Is it not, how do I stop a teenager from learning how to make a bomb? If that's the information that's out there, how do I stop that? Because now I have a country or countries that don't like my country. And so now I have those AI programmers saying, no, I want to teach every kid in America how to make a bomb because I want them to destroy themselves. Right. And so
Right. Yeah.
I want to teach
Sure.
them how to do that. So how do we stop that from our borders from getting across in, from folks that do want to destroy each other?
Well, Dr. B, I think we raised more questions
Questions
than we
than we can
answered
answer.
today.
Yeah.
I have to say, but it's been, a very enjoyable conversation for me. One, I always love conversations that ask more questions than answer them, because an AI agent can answer questions, but human beings can pose a lot more, can ask why, or should, or shall I, why will I? These are important questions, and we've raised a whole bunch of important questions today. What, as you know, we like to give something, to the audience to try or to think about, like a big inquiry, big open-ended question maybe, to go away with. What if you had to give the audience something today, either something to go try or something to think about, what would it be?
Yeah, what I would do, and I would ask folks is because now, and I love what you said about going from information to knowledge to wisdom. And I would ask folks that the AI is not going anywhere. And the next time that you go on to your AI, try to find the wisdom in what you're doing. Like try to translate it from, okay, it just gave me the information. I don't think it's helpful to ask the AI, like who played in the, I mean, you might want to know just because you want to know who played in, Star Trek, original series that was, oh great. So it'll
It's
tell me.
useful. That's useful. It's
Yeah,
useful.
it's useful if you just want to know something.
Right.
But then we go, okay, so now I'm asking the AI to perform a task for me so that I can get ahead in my company. So let's say that I want to get promoted and I'm asking it, what do I have to do or who do I have to step on or what things did I get from that in order to be promoted in this job? Is it just that I have to be better than I am or do I have to sneak around and do some things against somebody else so they go down and I go up? And if that's the kind of questions you're asking, then I would say, what is the wisdom in me being able to get promoted in that job? And how am I going to help others and serve others through the process? Because that's where the wisdom, and if we begin to start seeking wisdom through the AI, I think we have a better chance of using it and it being a tool for us and not something that's going to take us into darkness. But we have to, as humans right now, we have to say, wait, the AI can't be the wisdom part of it. I have to be based on what my moral compass and my value system that I have currently. And then how do I improve my value system? And that might even be the question that you're starting to ask that you want to glean
Well,
wisdom from.
there are reasons why books like the Bible and the Bhagavad Gita And the sutras, the Pali sutras of Buddhism, are referred to as the wisdom literature, because even 2,000, 3,000 years ago, a lot of the questions we're asking about AI and humans were posed by those humans back then, and they had some answers. And I'm not sure I see a lot of that wisdom being programmed in, but as a human being in the audience listening to this, you can access that wisdom literature and choose, and you do have choice. And so it's a great inquiry, Dr. B. So, be wise in your application of this knowledge. And maybe we'll just leave it at that.
I love it. I
So,
love it.
well, thanks for being on the show. It was really, really interesting conversation. And where can folks find you if they want to reach out to you and get your book? And
Yeah, so my whole life is in my own web page that's on the internet as part of the program, right? It's at BrianEArnold.com, BRIAN, the letter E is in Edward, last name Arnold, so BrianEArnold.com. And from there you can branch out to you can get my books, you can get my devotion. I would love to see more people that show up on the routine.live that we do every day. If you type in the routine.live and just sit and listen and talk, I do a short devotional, then I do some affirmations, and then
What's
we
your
talk
what was
about
your
things.
affirmation for today? I'm curious.
What did we talk about today? We talked about living in God's favor today is what we did
That was
in
your
our devotional, and
affirmation.
we talked that. Well, so I have 30 affirmations that we do. Here's one of them, though. I make meaningful connections every day. I make meaningful connections every day. And
Well,
today I made a
there you
meaningful
did
connection with Mr.
it.
David.
Oh, thank you, Dr. B. I appreciate that. It was meaningful, and I appreciate you. And I will put a link to your website in the show notes for
Oh, thank
folks
you.
where they can find you and get your books and your listen to your devotionals and learn about your affirmations, like making meaningful connections.
Every day I make
All
meaningful
right.
connections.
Thanks
I
so
love it.
much. All
You're
right. Take
welcome.
care.
It's been so fun. Thank you, David. I appreciate it.